Good morning. This is Tom Parrish, the editor of Distribution Center Magazine, Hardee's official publication. And I'm talking today to Frank Hurt, who has been a guest on this podcast before. Frank is the founder of River Heights Consulting. And I'd like to think even more importantly, if Frank doesn't mind me saying this, he's been a regular contributor to Distribution Center Magazine, of which I am the editor. And more importantly, or at least I'm the editor through the rest of this month, when they welcome a new editor aboard, Herb Werpel. And we're approaching December here in 2017. Frank, welcome aboard.
Hey, thanks so much, Tom. And I'm honored to once more be part of your podcast.
Well, I appreciate that. In fact, we spoke obviously about a little bit about this particular podcast before we started taping it. And the thing that I asked for was, to give this sort of a headline, if you will, things wholesalers should do preparing for 2018. You're sort of noted in the industry, certainly in our magazine, for your comments on the topic of distributor planning. As we get ready to think about the coming year, can you give us a few things you believe every wholesaler should be thinking about?
Sure, Tom. That's kind of an easy one. And I'm going to step back and say, you know, there's a lot of blocking and tackling. Maybe we can talk about that later on. But I think that there's really four topics that just absolutely have to be loaded into every single distributor's mind out there if they want to be part of the future. And that's those four topics really are people, process, technology, and analytics. And you know, and if you're a distributor and you're not giving each one of these some serious thought, the world's going to come creeping up on you in the night, and things are not going to be good someday.
Well, I like the way you phrase that. Somehow, I imagine you have a longer laundry list of important items, but since you seem to be pretty strong on these, let's go down the list and ask for some elaboration. You mentioned people first. Was that for a reason?
Yeah. I mean, If you're a distributor and you take part in the benchmarking reports and look at them and spend any time thinking about them, the first and foremost list is that people represent the outlay of 60% of our revenue. So every dollar that we bring in gross margin, we spend 60 cents of it on people. And, you know, and if we think about the, you know, the old saying that people are our biggest asset. You know, sometimes you see it on the wall of dilapidated old buildings and warehouses and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But for distributors, it's really true, and it's true by a wide margin. And you know, and here's the part that bothers me: if we think of people as an asset, the same way we might think of as a real estate asset, what we're going to be looking at is we're going to be looking at a really nice building and is in constant state of disrepair, where there's something that needs to be done. We never take a proactive stance on it. And you know, and furthermore, this isn't just something that I'm throwing out there as a big mouth consultant. Instead, here's a couple of thoughts. Most distributors have really no ongoing plan for training.
Mm-hmm.
They hire people. They leave it up to the person to develop their own skills. And here's the reason why I do that. Because most distributor leaders and most presidents and vice presidents and the guys at the top of distributors are the kind of folks that are used to doing that. They're driven to do that themselves. They spend lots of their free time thinking about the business. That they've always been that way, and they assume that everybody else is that way. And it's not the case. It just simply isn't the case. The vast majority of the people actually need some help along the way. Now, that's one thing. Number two, you know, if you read any of the books, and I'll give you a great example. There was a book about 20 years ago called First Break All the Rules. And
mm-hmm.
In that book, they analyzed and said, where would employees rather work? Would they rather work for an absolutely fabulous company with a superstar CEO and have a crappy manager, or would they rather work for a company that was, you know, maybe even a little bit lackluster, but where they had a great manager? And what they found was it is that people want to, are attracted by, and stay in a company based on the quality of their frontline managers. Now, here's the question for distributors. What's the management skills of the people that your employees go to first? And I'll just throw some things out. What about the warehouse manager? What about the inside sales manager? What about the accounting manager? You know, they may have some fabulous technical skills. They may be able to do their job better than you think, but they know how to handle an issue when an employee handles an issue. And even more so today, because you look at the news and read about all the sexual harassment and all that kind of stuff. Do they know how to handle that? And that puts a distributor, you know, at risk. And, and finally, you know, true confessions, I'm 63. I'm one of the baby boomers. And baby boomers are marching off into the sunset at a rate of about 10,000 a day and say, okay, where are the new employees going to come from? And once we get them, how do we ramp up their performance? Because here's the deal. Most of us don't even have a process for bringing on a new employee or even finding a new employee.
It's interesting you should talk about process, because you just tie process and people together. Are your first two points tied together by accident, or was there a purpose here?
Well, you know, I think that everything we talk about is kind of tied together, but they definitely are linked together. And let me give you an example. Onboarding process. We talk about bringing on new employees, but I keep hearing horror stories from employees, and the horror story usually goes like this. I was trained for my job. I came in the first day, I met with the HR, they spent a couple hours with me, I shook hands with the president of the company, and then they had me sit down in a chair and watch somebody else work. And that person didn't know what they were supposed to teach me. They didn't know anything. So we had a nice conversation, and I talked to them, and I watched them work all day. And that went on for 2 weeks, and at the end of the 2 weeks, they just said, okay, now go do your job. And these folks get frustrated, tossed into the fray. You set a poor example at the very beginning, and if there was a process to it, it wouldn't be that way. It would be far more smoother. The employee would like it. The company would get money back for it, and everything. And the sad part is, almost everybody thinks they have a process. I talk to distributor owners and managers all the time, and they go, yeah, we got a process. And I go, okay, here's the definition of the process. There has to be documentation, something that you can hand to an employee and say, this is the way your job needs to be done. There has to be some metrics. So you say, okay, if your job is to enter orders, it's not good enough to enter two orders a day. You know, here's a metric of how you're doing a good job. And there has to be management points, something that a manager can pull out to help employee improve. And you know, maybe the proper thing, instead of calling them management points, it's maybe cooler to call them coaching points. But these things, they have to be there, and things have to be done consistently. Once it's done consistently, then you can go back and tweak for improvement. And I like to tell this story, because in my little hometown of Taylorville, Illinois, in the heartland of America, there happens to be a hamburger joint that was started within a week of the McDonald's brothers starting their little hamburger joint out in California. The only difference is this place had a better location than the McDonald's boys did. And you go, okay, how come McDonald's went on to be a company that serves 47 million people a week, and yet this little hamburger stand still has 11 stools and two people working? And the reason is because McDonald's has process. They probably serve, you know, whether you like their food or don't like their food, there's probably not too much difference between a French fry bought in downtown Tupelo and downtown Tokyo.
Yep.
And they do it all. They don't pay major wages. They don't even have highly skilled workers. But if you look at their process, it's 10 miles deep. And so there has to be a process to make things go.
Okay, I think I got it on the process for onboarding. Where else should we be thinking process?
You know, let me go back to something that one of my mentors told me a long time ago. When you have a whole bunch of ideas, put them all in a spreadsheet and sort them by the value, and do the ones that are at the top because they've got the highest value. This is the first thing. It is across the board after visiting with literally distributors I've seen. Distributors who have a pricing process generally score 2 points, not 2%, 2 points better gross margin. Think about this for a Hardy distributor that's $50 million. What's 2 points? Well, that's a cool million to the bottom line. Now, let's think about another one that's kind of top of the list. According to a consultant who I respect and who does a lot of work in other industries similar to the HVAC industry, it costs about $150,000 to bring a new salesman on up to speed and on board before he starts making money for the company.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine what it would be like if we could trim that 150 down to 100. That's another 50 grand to the bottom line. And finally, there's a lot of distributors who just like the guys who told me we had a process but really didn't. They have almost processes. One of the things that I would challenge people to do is to say, let's take time right now or sometime during the early part of 2018 to take some of those almost processes and think about how can we put documentation, how can we put metrics, and how can we put the right coaching points in place, because if you do that, it'll pay big dividends later on.
Okay, I think you've hit it on the process stuff. What about technology? What are you thinking? What are your thoughts there?
Well, why technology? I got a couple of things of why. Because, first of all, it's moving forward at a breakneck speed.
Yep.
And today we're talking mostly about software tools for distributors. And so if we think of those software tools, most of the stuff is cheaper today than it was just a few years ago. And yet, there's a lot of distributors who go, and I'll give you an example. I talked to one a couple weeks ago who said, we've been thinking about having a catalog, an online, mm-hmm. not an online catalog as much as just an online search finder for our customers. We think it would be good. They've asked for it. And pardon me, a few years ago, they went out and got a quotation for it. It was $100,000. By accident, the owner's son, who is a really go-getting young guy who's not afraid of technology, went out blindly without asking and got a price and found out that the new price was under 20. Things are coming down rapidly. For instance, you can get a mobile app created for $2,500.
Yeah, I remember when they were like $10,000, $15,000 just to start with.
Yeah.
More than that, actually.
That $2,500 probably might even be less than that today.
Yep.
But if you think about it, if you get an app that saves your inside sales department 80 hours a year, it's paid for itself. And I think there's a lot of things like that out there. Same principle for software required to enter orders into the system. There's stuff that the customer can send you a purchase order and it automatically gets loaded into your system. There's technology required so that you can talk to a contractor and take inventory of their system. If you're responsible for keeping things full, you can barcode your warehouse all for a fraction of what it costs. And if you don't take the time to look at that technology now, somebody else will. And that somebody is likely to put your model under more pressure as the future works on, and that pressure translates into smaller bottom line, less paycheck for everybody there.
Yeah. Well, you threw out analytics. So why don't you explain that a little more deeply? What exactly do you mean by that?
Okay. Well, first of all, analytics just as I said. Really simple analytic and looked at the price of labor versus the price of technology. Go, understanding that labor costs are going up, technology prices are going down, that's one kind of an analytic. But there's other kinds of analytics. And here's the state of distribution today as far as analytics. A contractor can quit buying one of the major hard goods, but some small piece of equipment. They can quit buying it from one distributor and swing their business to a new source. And you look and go, how long would it take for you to realize that that customer quit doing business with you? You know, would it take a year, or would it not even come out until the customer happened to mention, oh, gee whiz, I found somebody that had this product, and, you know, it works so much better than what you've got, and since I'm such a nice guy, I'm going to tell you, maybe I should tell your customer to open up for him. Here's another piece of historical that could be pushed into the future. If we can use analytics to predict the future, it gives us a tremendous competitive advantage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do we really know what product slowly sinking into the sunset versus products that are emerging and starting to take off? And, you know, and if you wait until, you know, it's been full swing on that new product, you're just going to be one of the boys out selling something that everybody wants. But if you had an ability to understand that and go, hey, wait a minute, here's a trend going on in with our customers, should we look at it and see if it's a local phenomenon? Or should we look at it and see if it's a national phenomenon? Is this an opportunity for us to grow our business? Now, a final, you know, I talked about pushing out into the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's talk about what I think is kind of important, and that's forecasting. You know, because what do you need when you're running a business? You need to know, you know, what are you going to sell next year? But most of us still use that old Daniel Boone approach where we lick our finger, we hold it up in the air, and then we go, oh, yeah, okay, the market's going to be up 10% next year. And we do that without any kind of gut-level feeling. And for all intents and purposes, we're going by gut feeling. And the problem is that most of us don't know if that's because we had a bad piece of that spicy Thai lunch or whether it's something real.
Yeah, make me laugh with your analogy there, but it's very cool stuff to think about. But are there any blocking and tackling things that you want to circle back to for this year?
I mentioned that, and I could go on and on about that forever. As a matter of fact, a couple of years ago, I wrote a book on end of the year planning for industrial distributors as opposed to Hardy. But I think a lot of it would apply. Here's a couple of things. It shocks me that there still are distributors who don't have a sales plan for next year. They haven't said, okay, each salesman tell me how your territory is going to grow, even though it's going to be inaccurate, even though there's some people that go by the model of their sandbaggers and losers. What do you think your territory is going to grow? They put all the numbers together and say, okay, based on what our salespeople take, are we going to have any profits left over? You know, so there needs to be a profit projection tied to that sales projection. We need to have a plan for new hires. Say, if we think that business is going to continue in a positive direction, at what point do we hire somebody? How long will it take us to find that person? How long will it take us to train that person? That would be a really good thing. And also, maybe we have a plan in there that's the reverse of that, that let's say the economy just suddenly falls into the toilet. And we go, okay, at what point do we look at starting to cut back on some of our expenses, and what expenses would we do?
Mm-hmm.
It would be wrong for me to say that people are so big without saying there needs to be something about people. What's our existing employee pool look like? Do we have any underperformers? Do we have anybody that's ready for promotion? You know, have we done an annual review for all those people that haven't made that happen right away? And you know, and finally, you know, I wrote an article I think 2 years ago for your magazine, and I spoke on this. Is what have we done to put together a plan, not with every manufacturer, but with the key manufacturers that make a difference for us,
mm-hmm.
so that we can create synergy as we deal with them. And you know, and finally, because when I was a young man, and Naugahyde Furniture was in style, and leisure suits were the thrill of the day. People did plans, and after they were done, they put it on that big credenza right underneath of the big fish that they caught in Mexico 5 years ago, and that was the last time they looked at it until December of the following year. I think you have a plan to review your plan to make sure and say what's changed, what hasn't changed, why didn't my first plan work out well? And so that's kind of my my nutshell of what you should be doing right away.
Well, I think, as usual, you're on target. I want to thank you for your time, Frank. Before we leave, how should people get in touch with you?
If people want to reach me, I'm fortunate. I have a very unique last name. It's H-U-R-T-T-E. If you do a Google search for Frank Hurt, you'll find me. Or else you can come to riverheightsconsulting.com. Or visit our blog, which is called The Distributor Channel. And again, if you just do a Google search for The Distributor Channel, you'll come straight to us. You'll see a smiling picture of my mugshot with the numbers carefully removed, so you can't tell where I got it. You'll think I got it at Olin Mills instead of at the Scott County Jail.
Well, I appreciate
it. Call me, 563-514-1104. For those of you that are old school and like to talk to humans.
I may have spoken over you. Would you repeat that, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. 563-514-1104. For people who like to talk instead of text.